Welcome friends to Literature Mantra, I'm Harsh Singh and in this audio we'll discuss the major theorists in the field of post-colonial literary theory. Now from an exam point of view this is extremely important because the ideas that these theoreticians or theorists have proposed, they are always useful in let's say writing answers. If you are sitting for some multiple choice question exam, direct questions come on these major theorists and the ideas that they have propounded. Okay? Now the first and the most important theorist is Edward Said, okay? And in particular his work which is Orientalism. Okay? This was published in 1978 and this idea of Orientalism is very important. So kya hai ye Orientalism? See, Said's concept of Orientalism basically critiques how the West, also called the Occident, okay? One is the Orient and the other is the Occident, okay? West or the Occident, okay? How the West has historically constructed the East as being exotic, as being backward, and also as being uncivilized. And this construction served to justify colonial domination, okay? Because when the colonial powers came to any country, they just said that we are coming and we have come to bring civilization. We are here to help you. But that can only be done if the native people in any country are described as being backward, uncivilized. Tabhi to wo log accept karenge na, the more superior, the supposedly superior form of European culture. Hai na? So this idea of constructing the East as backward, uncivilized to justify colonial domination. And Edward Said has argued that these representations were not just innocent depictions, representation of the East. They were not just innocent depictions but were deeply intertwined with the power dynamics of colonialism. Okay, so it's not like innocently kisi ke bare mein aapne galat likh diya ya misrepresent kar diya. It was not something which happened through coincidence or chance. The misrepresentation of the East or the native people was a deliberate act, was a well thought out plan of action. And in this work, Orientalism, you know, Edward Said also emphasized how literature, how art and other cultural productions have been used to perpetuate stereotypes, okay? Perpetuate stereotypes and maintain power dynamics between the colonizer and the colonized. And Said's work, Orientalism, is important because this work laid the foundation for our understanding of how cultural representations are linked to political power. Now, we may think that political power is different from culture, or politics is different from culture. But here in this work, Edward Said shows that cultural representations are linked to political power. Okay? Now, iske baad aap ek aur cheez dhyan mein rakhna, that at the beginning of this book, Orientalism, there are two epigraphs. Epigraph kya hota hai? A kind of short quotation or saying at the beginning of a book. Okay? And these are very important. One is a quotation from Karl Marx that he quotes. And the quotation is, quote, "They cannot represent themselves. They must be represented," unquote. Okay? They cannot represent themselves. They must be represented. After that, there is another quotation. This is by Benjamin Disraeli. Benjamin Disraeli was a prime minister of Great Britain. Inki quotation hai, "The East is a career." Okay? Within quotes, "The East is a career." So, usi se andaza lag jata hai that what this work, Orientalism, will be about. And this emphasis on two words. Ek to hai, "They cannot represent themselves, they must be represented." So this emphasis on representing, okay, representation of the East. And in reality, it is less of representation, it is more of misrepresentation. The West has always tried to and done so. It has misrepresented the East to suit its own purposes. Uske baad jo dusra quotation hai, dusra epigraph jo hai, "The East is a career." So rather than going to the East or going to non-European countries for the purpose of civilization, the truth was that Britishers, Europeans went to Africa and India and other parts of the world as a matter of career. Unko apna career banana tha. Okay? So it was about economics. Okay? Now as I told you that from an exam point of view, these facts, these ideas are extremely important. So definitely make a note of it and remember it. Now after that, the next important theorist is Homi Bhabha. Okay? And his one work is very famous. It's called The Location of Culture. Okay? The Location of Culture, which came out in 1994. Now three things you should keep in mind. One is the concept of hybridity. Okay? Hybridity. Uske baad the concept of mimicry. Okay? Mimicry. M-I-M-I-C-R-Y. Mimicry. And the third is third space. Okay? Ye bhi ek concept hai. Third space. So let me discuss each of it one by one. First of all, what is the meaning of hybridity? हाइब्रिड से मतलब क्या होता है, अ काइंड ऑफ मिक्सचर, ठीक है. सो भाभा इंट्रोड्यूस द कॉन्सेप्ट ऑफ हाइब्रिडिटी टू डिस्क्राइब द कल्चरल मिक्सिंग दैट अकर्स इन कलोनियल एंड पोस्ट कलोनियल कॉन्टेक्स्ट्स, ठीक है. दिस हाइब्रिडिटी क्रिएट्स न्यू हाइब्रिड आइडेंटिटीज दैट चैलेंज द बाइनरी ऑपोजिशंस ऑफ कॉलोनाइजर वर्सेज कॉलोनाइज्ड. Hybridity is seen as a space of negotiation and transformation. Okay, because suppose there is British culture, there is Indian culture. What if there is a mixing of the two? That will result in a kind of hybrid culture. Okay, after that mimicry. Now mimicry is just a kind of imitation. But along with imitation, it is also making fun of the person who is being imitated. So using this term, Bhabha explored how colonized subjects or colonized people often imitate the colonizer's culture, or the, let's say, British culture or European culture. But this mimicry can be very subversive in nature, revealing the ambivalence and contradictions of colonial authority. Mimicry can destabilize colonial power by exposing its inconsistencies. Okay? How is this? Because the Britishers or the Europeans always want the natives to act like them, become like them, behave like them. But when the natives or people of the East start to behave like the Britishers or the Europeans, then the Britishers or the Europeans or the Western people or the, let's say, colonial powers are also fearful of this. Okay? They fear the imitation by these natives. Why? Because वो लोग क्यों आए थे, कॉलोनाइजर क्यों आए थे, टू स्प्रेड सिविलाइजेशन टू अ बैकवर्ड प्लेस. बट वॉट इफ द पीपल लिविंग इन दैट बैकवर्ड प्लेस, दैट सपोजेडली बैकवर्ड प्लेस, जस्ट बिकेम लाइक द यूरोपियंस, एज सिविलाइज्ड एज देम इन देयर ग्रूमिंग, इन देयर एजुकेशन, इन देयर बिहेवियर, देन दैट विल बिकम अ थ्रेट टू द कलोनियल पावर्स ना, बिकॉज आफ्टरवर्ड्स यू कांट कॉल दोज पीपल अनसिविलाइज्ड, सो प्रोबेबली यू विल हैव टू लीव दैट कंट्री. सो दिस इज अ एम्बिवलेंस, a kind of ambivalence that exists in colonial rule. Okay, because on one hand the colonial powers will say, imitate us, become like us, and when we actually start to become like them, they become fearful, they become afraid of us. Okay, so this idea of mimicry can be very subversive. Okay, this is the idea of Homi Bhabha. After that, third space. Okay, third space, ye kya hota hai? Now this idea of third space refers to the space of cultural interaction and negotiation where hybrid identities are formed. Okay, and this space allows for the creation of new cultural meanings and identities that transcend colonial binaries. Now earlier I told you about hybridity, that the mixing of cultures, right? And third space is just the space of cultural interaction and negotiation where hybrid identities are formed. And this space is important because it allows for the creation of new cultural meanings and identities that transcend colonial binaries. Okay, because ultimately there is the formation of a new hybrid culture, okay, which is neither colonial nor purely colonizer culture, but a mix of the two, a hybrid of the two. Now after Homi Bhabha, let's come to Gayatri Spivak. Okay, now Gayatri Spivak is also pretty important. In particular, her famous essay called Can the Subaltern Speak? Okay, Can the Subaltern Speak? Now try to read this entire essay because it is extremely important to read this if you really want to have a good grasp. After that, there are three major ideas that Gayatri Spivak proposes. One is the idea of subaltern. Okay, so what does Gayatri Spivak refer to when she uses the term subaltern? Subaltern se kya matlab hai? Uske baad ek aur inka phrase hai, epistemic violence. Okay, so ye kya hota hai? Epistemic violence. Uske baad, what is the meaning of strategic essentialism? Okay, strategic essentialism. Now, keep in mind that all of these three terms have been coined by Gayatri Spivak. But subaltern, of course, was originally used by Antonio Gramsci. But it is Gayatri Spivak whose essay actually made this word very important and also famous. Okay? Now, first of all, subaltern. क्या होता है ये? See, Spivak's concept of the subaltern refers to marginalized groups. Okay, so it refers to marginalized groups who are excluded from dominant power structures and whose voices are often silenced. Okay, in this essay, she questioned whether the subaltern can ever truly have a voice within dominant discourses. And if you read this essay, you'll find that her answer is no. For instance, who can be a subaltern in India, for example? Now, with all due respects to all communities and all individuals, a subaltern in the way in which Gayatri Spivak talks about, okay, it can be, let's say, a tribal woman living in a remote part of India, jo shayad Hindi ya English ya jo bhi major language hai, regional languages hain, wo bhi wo nahi bolti hongi. So, in a way, other people speak on her behalf. So this is the point of Gayatri Spivak, that instead of other people speaking on her behalf, why not give her the opportunity to speak? But we all know that it hardly happens, right? So this question remains whether the subalterns in any society will ever truly have a voice within dominant discourses. Okay? After that, the idea of epistemic violence. Ye kya hota hai? Now, Spivak highlighted, you know, how colonialism not only oppressed people, okay, not only oppressed people physically, but also epistemically. ठीक है, एपिस्टीमिकली स्पेलिंग क्या है, ई पी आई एस टी ई एम आई सी ए डबल एल वाई, एपिस्टीमिकली. एंड हाउ वॉज दिस ऑपरेशन डन? बाय इरेजिंग एंड डी वैल्यूइंग देयर नॉलेज एंड वेज ऑफ नोइंग. नाउ एंड दिस कॉन्सेप्ट अंडरस्कोर्स और हाईलाइट्स द इम्पॉर्टेंस ऑफ रिकग्नाइजिंग एंड वैल्यूइंग इंडिजिनस नॉलेज सिस्टम्स. ठीक है, सो बेसिकली आप ये समझ लो दैट दिस इज अनदर वे ऑफ ऑप्रेसिंग द नेटिव पीपल. सो नेटिव पीपल आर नॉट ओनली ऑप्रेस्ड फिजिकली बट ऑल्सो एपिस्टीमिकली. हाउ? बाय इरेजिंग एंड डी वैल्यूइंग देयर नॉलेज एंड वेज ऑफ नोइंग. ठीक है, और साथ साथ आप ये भी ध्यान में रखना दैट वॉट इज द मीनिंग ऑफ एपिस्टीमोलॉजी. एपिस्टीमोलॉजी क्या मतलब है इसका? बेसिकली इट इज द स्टडी ऑफ नेचर, ऑरिजिन एंड लिमिट्स ऑफ ह्यूमन नॉलेज. ठीक है, नेचर, ऑरिजिन एंड लिमिट्स ऑफ ह्यूमन नॉलेज. एंड बेसिकली इट इज अ ब्रांच ऑफ फिलोसफी दैट इज कंसर्न्ड विद नॉलेज. सो इसमें यही पढ़ते हैं दैट हाउ वी एक्चुअली अक्वायर नॉलेज, हाउ वी नो अबाउट द वैलिडिटी एंड द लिमिट्स ऑफ नॉलेज. राइट, वैलिडिटी एंड लिमिट्स ऑफ नॉलेज. सो इन अ वे द स्टडी ऑफ हाउ वी नो थिंग्स, उसे कहते हैं एपिस्टेमोलॉजी. सो सपोज देर इज अ डोमिनेंट सिस्टम ऑफ नॉलेज, एंड सिंस दैट सिस्टम ऑफ नॉलेज इज डोमिनेंट, ऑल अदर सिस्टम्स ऑफ नॉलेज आर मार्जिनलाइज्ड और साइलेंस्ड. सो देयर विल अकर अ एपिस्टेमिक वायलेंस. सो एपिस्टेमिक वायलेंस रिफर्स टू द हार्म दैट इज इन्फ्लेक्टेड. ठीक है, द हार्म दैट इज इन्फ्लेक्टेड अपॉन इंडिविजुअल्स और ग्रुप्स थ्रू द डिनायल, डिस्टोर्शन और डीवैल्यूएशन ऑफ देयर नॉलेज और वेज ऑफ नोइंग. Okay, not just devaluing their knowledge, but devaluing the ways in which they acquire knowledge. Okay? Use kehte hain epistemic violence. Now, after that, strategic essentialism. Okay? What is strategic essentialism? Now, Spivak proposed this idea as a kind of temporary solidarity. Okay? So, aise samjho aap that strategic essentialism means a kind of temporary solidarity among marginalized groups. And what is the purpose of this temporary solidarity? To achieve some aim, to achieve some political goals, despite the fact that there are plenty of internal differences within the marginalized groups. Okay, so kind of temporary solidarity. And in a way, it is a kind of pragmatic approach. It is a kind of practical approach to political activism. Okay? After that, the next important theorist is Franz Fanon. Now, Franz Fanon's two works are very important. One is called The Wretched of the Earth. ठीक है, द रेचेड ऑफ द अर्थ. एंड द अदर इज कॉल्ड ब्लैक स्किन व्हाइट मास्क. ठीक है, ब्लैक स्किन व्हाइट मास्क. सो बेसिकली व्हाट आर द की आइडियाज दैट फ्रांस फैनो हैज प्रोपाउंडेड? नाउ वन इज द आइडिया ऑफ साइकोलॉजिकल इफेक्ट्स ऑफ कॉलोनाइजेशन. वी कैन अंडरस्टैंड द फिजिकल इफेक्ट or the economic effect, but colonization also has psychological effects. And it was Franz Fanon who explored the psychological impact of colonization on both, okay, on both the colonized people as well as the colonizers, okay, so including issues of identity, alienation, mental health. So he examined how colonialism affects the psyche and self-perception of colonized individuals in particular, because ultimately it is the colonized people or the native people who are affected negatively, right? After that, his idea of violence and liberation. Now, he also argued that violence is a necessary and inevitable part of the decolonization process, as it allows the colonized to reclaim their humanity and agency. So, Franz Fanon basically saw violence as a kind of catharsis or having a cathartic effect that could lead to liberation and self-determination. Okay, so the point is that he's not glorifying violence. Ye unka point nahi hai, that he's not saying that violence is a good thing. He's just saying that it is something inevitable if we really want to achieve total decolonization. Okay? After that, the next theorist is Ngugi Wa Thiong'o. Okay? Ngugi Wa Thiong'o. Now, he has written two important works from the perspective of post-colonial literary theory. One is Decolonizing the Mind. Okay? Decolonizing the Mind, which was published in 1986. Uske baad ek aur work hai inka. It's called Petals of Blood. Okay? Petals of Blood, which was published in 1977. Okay? So, Ngugi emphasized the importance of language in the process of decolonization. Okay? This emphasis on language. Language as a carrier of culture. Ye inka point hai. And he advocated for writing in indigenous languages to reclaim cultural identity and resist colonial influence. He argued that language is a key site of cultural and political struggle. Why? Because language is a carrier of culture. Man lo ki if Hindi or Tamil or Bengali is spoken in India, it is also likely that many cultural practices, many cultural meanings are conveyed through these native languages. In case we stop writing in Hindi, Tamil or Bengali and the vernacular languages, then we will end up losing our culture. Because language is a carrier of culture. Everything cannot be translated in English, right? There are plenty of words, phrases or ideas that are best understood in the native tongue, in the vernacular tongue. That is why Ngugi Wa Thiong'o talks about the importance of language and language as being the carrier of culture. Okay? Now, along with this, Ngugi Wa Thiong'o also critiqued cultural imperialism. Okay? Cultural imperialism of colonial education systems and their role in perpetuating colonial power structures. And because of this, Ngugi also called for a return to indigenous cultural practices and knowledge systems. Okay? So, he also found out that, you know, by adopting a particular education system of, let's say, Europe or some other country, you're actually undermining or undervaluing your own indigenous knowledge systems or cultural practices. So, Ngugi said that we should return to indigenous knowledge systems so that we can get rid of cultural imperialism also. Okay? Now, after that, another important theoretician that you should keep in mind is Chinua Achebe. Okay? Chinua Achebe. Now, Chinua Achebe is mostly read when we read African literature or when we read post-colonial literature. And two works are particularly important which he wrote. One is Things Fall Apart. This is a novel. Okay? Things Fall Apart. Uske baad ek aur inka work hai. It's called An Image of Africa, Racism in Conrad's Heart of Darkness. Okay? An Image of Africa, Racism in Conrad's Heart of Darkness. Now this second work, An Image of Africa, Racism in Conrad's Heart of Darkness. This is a kind of critique of Joseph Conrad's novel, Heart of Darkness. Okay? Now, if you have read Heart of Darkness, you know that that novel is apparently a critique of colonialism, is apparently a critique of imperialism and the European practices. But the way in which Joseph Conrad describes the natives of Congo, the natives of Africa, it seems as though he's actually undermining their humanity. He's actually describing the natives of Africa as being savages or barbarians. And this is what the point of Chinua Achebe is. He calls Heart of Darkness a racist novel. Okay? Now, after that, another issue that the works of Chinua Achebe analyze is the colonial impact on African societies and African people. One, I told you, the issue was of representation of Africa, and then what was the colonial impact on African societies, and in particular the work Things Fall Apart. Okay, if you have read this novel, Things Fall Apart, this is what Chinua Achebe tries to analyze. So he talks about the disruption of traditional cultures, okay, disruption of traditional cultures with the coming of the Europeans. And in general, the novels of Achebe depict the struggles of African communities to navigate the changes brought by colonialism. Now, the changes that colonialism brought may be in the form of political, maybe political in nature, maybe social in nature, maybe economic in nature, because we all know that wherever the colonizers went, they imposed their own laws, they imposed English also. Now, of course, it is easy to say that English is such an easy language, but in those days, just imagine, in those days when English was not spoken widely in the world, and then a foreign language is imposed on the natives, to tab unko kaisa lagta hoga, right? So these are the issues that the novels of Achebe try to analyze. Now after that, if you really want to grasp post-colonial literary theory, in addition to these theorists, uske baad ek aur important issue hai within post-colonial literary theory, and that is the issue of subaltern studies. Now at the outset, let me tell you that there was a group called Subaltern Studies Group. Okay? This was a group of South Asian scholars which emerged in the early 1980s. And their primary focus is on post-colonial and post-imperial societies, particularly in South Asia. Many of the group members were Indians. Okay? And let me tell you that not just Indians, but this group was founded by the historian Ranajit Guha. Okay? Then some other members of the group were Dipesh Chakravarti, Partha Chatterjee, Sumit Sarkar, all of these were scholars in the subaltern studies group. Uske baad aate hain that what was the work of these scholars and why is the subaltern studies group important to understand post-colonial literary theory. Now keep in mind that this group was influenced by the concept of history from below. Okay? Within quotes, history from below. This is an approach that is followed in cultural studies by cultural studies scholars such as E.P. Thompson, Raymond Williams, as well as Eric Hobsbawm. Okay, Eric Hobsbawm, E-R-I-C Eric and H-O-B-S-B-A-W-M, Eric Hobsbawm. So they were influenced by this principle of talking about history from below. Now what is the meaning of this phrase? The meaning is that to write history from the perspective of the oppressed and marginalized. Okay, this in one sentence, if you want to understand the meaning of this, it means to write history from the perspective of the oppressed and marginalized. So the subaltern studies group aimed to challenge the dominant, the elitist narratives of Indian history by focusing on the experiences and agency of subaltern groups such as peasants, such as workers, such as other marginalized communities. Because we all know that when we read history, all that we read is about some major freedom fighters. What about the countless number of ordinary people who also participated? Why does history not have any mention of them, right? So this is one of the aims of the subaltern studies group. They challenge the dominant elitist narratives of existing Indian history by focusing on the experiences and agency of subaltern groups such as peasants, workers and other marginalized communities. Okay, because ये जो subaltern groups हैं, they are hardly ever consulted, their version of history is hardly ever mentioned, and all that we read about is few important freedom fighters, that they did this, they did that, and so on. And another objective of the subaltern studies group was to highlight the active role, okay? Highlight the active role of subaltern groups in resisting colonial and post-colonial oppression. Okay? One was of course to rewrite history, but at the same time their aim was also to highlight what the role of these subaltern groups was in fighting the British, in fighting colonial and post-colonial oppression. Okay? Along with this, as I told you, that they wanted to challenge the focus that is there in history textbooks on elite leaders. Okay? On elite leaders, and they wanted to emphasize the contribution of ordinary people. Okay? Jinke bare mein shayad history mein padhte bhi nahi hai hum log. They wanted to record the contribution of those subaltern individuals and groups. Okay? And as I told you, that their approach was inspired by the idea of history from below. Okay? History from below. This is an approach that is followed in cultural studies. So, in one line, the aim of the subaltern studies group was to recover the voices and experiences of those individuals, those communities, those groups who had been left out of mainstream historical narratives. Okay?